back here. We were here living in the missions house from 2007 to 2008, right before we launched to the mission field. And so it always feels like home being in the missions house. But it's like my amazing home, because every time I come back, you guys have upgraded it for me while I was away. So thank you very much for that. That's absolutely fantastic. Before I forget, we have a little sign-up sheet on the missions table, and we're here for about a week and a half, and we thought, what's the best way to try to connect with as many people as we can? And we don't have a good way. So we have a sign-up sheet on the missions table, and we just put on it basically breakfast and dinner, and that's, you know, if you want to pick your favorite restaurant or if you'd like to have us over or something like that, we would love that. And we put afternoon tea. So if you would like to come to the missions house, we will make up a pot of our local favorite tea house in Belfast's tea, and you can come and have tea with us, and we'd love to just chat and get to know you a little bit and talk ministry or life or whatever whatever you're interested in and whatever seems good. So that's an invitation. I should probably say that at the end so you'll remember, but I'm not sure I'll remember. So I'm saying it now on the missions table sign-up sheet. Well, who am I? Some of you will remember me from back in 2007 and 2008. We've been here a few times since. I see that we have really, really old prayer cards on the missions table out there, which is both a to-do for me and a way that you might recognize me or know me. You can maybe remember me, but there's a lot of new faces in here since I've been here. And so for some of you, my identity is unknown. I thought, okay, well, how can we fix that? So we'll start with the obvious, right? So I'm a little over 6 feet tall, late 40s, salt and pepper everything, a little bit overweight, scar on the right cheek, brown eyes, wearing an out-of-season jacket. Do you know me now? Maybe I can give you some facts about myself. Not how many emails I ignore a week. It should be something good, something juicy. So, okay, I have survived 3 explosions. One was negligence. One was a warning from organized crime. And one was a terrorist attack. If you would like to know the details of those, you'll have to ask me afterwards. I like to tell stories. That's good to know about me. I've written a book some folks in this church have read. I've got another one nearly finished. The old book was about Muslim refugees in Europe, which is part of where I've been. The new book is set in the muddy middle period of British history, after the collapse of the Roman Empire and before the establishment of the early English kingdoms, the time of St. Patrick. If that sounds interesting, you'll have to ask me after. That pivots nicely into where I live now. As Pastor Nathan mentioned, I live in Belfast. I don't really live in Belfast. I actually live in a little town called Lisburn, which is very near Belfast, but no one in America has heard of Lisburn. So Belfast makes a nice shorthand for that. Most of you probably know that Belfast is on the island of Ireland. I would suspect that some of you do not know that Belfast is not in the country of Ireland. So Belfast is in the country of Northern Ireland, which, like Scotland and Wales and England, is part of the United Kingdom, which is distinct and separate from the Republic of Ireland, which is part of the European Union. Some of you may have heard about some significant sectarian conflict over that division at some point in your life. In fact, we are actually in the midst right now of purchasing a house in an area which not too long ago was known as the Triangle of Death. If that sounds interesting to you, you'll have to ask me after. I like games. That's a good thing to know about me. computer games, board games. For a while in Germany, we had a regular group of folks that were coming over to the house to play Euro strategy board games. If that is something that you're interested in, that's something I can chat with you about afterwards. I also like to make up little games to amuse myself, and so I'm going to teach you guys one today that I like. It's pretty easy to play. So when you're watching Netflix or, you know, PBS or whatever it is that you like to watch, and this works especially well with modern costume drama, which is set in England, but it's applicable, actually, to a lot of different genres and things. So as you're watching, if you listen to the accents of the secondary characters, so the random people that they meet on the street or the extras or that kind of thing, if, for example, you notice that all of the people on the streets of London seem to have Irish accents, then you win. You've won the game. It's an interesting game to me because it relates directly to my work. I write and direct short films in Belfast, which is a place where much of what you stream is made, hence the accents. I hire and work with local artists and talents in an effort to reveal Christ, because can you imagine what it would be like if all of those people with Irish accents on those TV shows actually knew Jesus? Can you imagine what the stories that we'd see on television would be like then, and how different things would be? And I'm pretty excited to see those stories, and so that's why we do this. We want to have an impact. We want to see a change in the lives of those people. So, who am I? Do you know me yet? I've given you a lot of facts about me. I've given you some personal history and some details of my vocation. But knowing people is a funny thing. Before we went to the mission field, I worked as a media director at a moderately large church, and there was a gentleman in the church, we're going to call him Steve, and he had just a really powerful testimony. God had done some incredible things in his life, and he was willing to share that on camera, and so I was asked to film him, but I was not available on the same day that he was, so I set up all the cameras and the lights and the equipment, and we brought somebody else in to film him on the day that he was available, and then I got all the footage. And so he was really transparent. He shared a lot of beautiful and powerful things from his life, and I had a big job trying to figure out how to take all of that and cut it down to something that was of a watchable length. And so I spent several weeks going over and over Steve's life, and after I had heard his story again and again and I had been through it, I started to feel like I knew him, like he was a friend. And that's where things got weird. Because I went to a church reception, and across the room, I saw Steve. And I raised my hand and I said, "Steve!" And I ran over to him and I was so excited. And he turned and he looked at me, and his eyebrows drew down, and he turned his back and walked away. I thought, wow, that is pretty cold. But let's be honest, I was a complete stranger that just ran up to him like he was a dear old friend, and I creeped him out. I can't blame the guy for responding that way. I know what you're thinking. Come on, Ted. I'm not a video editor. This doesn't apply to me. I don't sit around for hours at a time staring at a screen, perusing the details of someone else's life and think I know them. Right, we never do that in 2023. Where am I going with this? Let's take a quick detour into Exodus. Moses in the wilderness runs into a burning bush. It gives him instructions and purpose. It calls him by name and assigns him a vocation. Certainly seems to know who he is. And he replies, "Who are you?" That's the TED paraphrase, by the way. It cannot be found at your local Christian bookstore. God said to Moses, "I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you. This is my name forever, the name you shall call me from generation to generation, God says that his name is I Am, a statement of being, of identity. You may have noticed, in all of my attempts to introduce myself, I've avoided that turn of phrase, hopefully. Why is that? Because words matter. We serve a God who literally spoke the universe into being. He could have snapped his fingers, he could have concentrated really hard, but he didn't. He spoke. Jesus is described as the Word. The Bible is a book of words, sometimes challenging, frustrating, difficult words. And it reiterates over and over that our words matter. What we say shapes our reality. Just a few examples. Death and life are the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruits. Proverbs 18:21. Let no corrupt talk come out of your mouths, but only such as is good for building up, as fits the occasion, that it may give grace to those who hear. Ephesians 4:29. I tell you, on the day of judgment, people will give account for every careless word they speak. Matthew 12:36. That one's terrifying. For the word of God is living and active, sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing the division of soul and of spirit, of joints and of marrow, and discerning the thoughts and intentions of the heart. Hebrews 4:12. If anyone thinks he is religious and does not bridle his tongue, but deceives his heart, this person's religion is worthless. James 1:26. But what comes out of the mouth proceeds from the heart, and this defiles a person. Matthew 15:18. The list goes on and on and on. I was listening to a podcast a few months ago talking about body image. Do you know that if you were trying to diet, and every time you look in the mirror, you tell yourself how fat you look, it encourages you to give up, to quit. Conversely, if you encourage yourself, note your progress, tell yourself a positive story of how you will look, it won't magically transform your body, but it will motivate you to continue. Our words have power to shape our reality. So what are those pesky words I've avoided? The identity words. And man, identity is a dangerous topic today, isn't it? Why is that? What is it about these identities that we claim that makes them hard even to talk about? I told you early on that I tell stories. I feel really good about that, honestly. It's something that I work hard at. I derive great joy from doing it, and I believe that vocationally it is the thing that God created me to do. So if I were to introduce myself to you again, I should say that I am a storyteller. Except that then I've told you and me a lie. I've taken the name of God, used to identify himself, his statement of being, and attached it to a good but lesser thing, my vocation. I tell stories. I am not a storyteller. I am so much more than that. I'd like to show you a little film that hopefully illustrates this idea. I did not give the guys upstairs much warning for that, but he's ready, so all right.
Let me go!
Who am I?
You're an old woman.
Who am I?
You can be whoever you want to be.
Where am I?
You're a baker. You bake my bread.
There you are. I've been looking everywhere for you.
Who am I?
You're my beloved.
I was so lost.
You wandered off, but I wouldn't stop looking until I found you.
So I would love to tell you all about that film, how we made it, how it came to be. But if you want to know, you'll have to ask me after. We see a confused woman. She asks who she is, like I did first today. She's given a physical description. You're an old woman. But that's wrong. That isn't her identity, and it doesn't make her less confused. Then she's told she can be anything she wants to be. Is there any answer more confusing or misleading than that one? Then she's reminded of her vocation. You're a baker. That's something. She can hang her hat on it. She smiles. For a moment, she has a sense of self, but it's not enough. It's incomplete, a tiny fractional helping of her true identity. I've talked a fair bit about vocational identity, but I would be remiss if I didn't hit another lesser identity that we like to claim, certainly one I struggle with. Family. I've come from a tight-knit family. We actually have a Latin plaque that reads Semper Familia that hangs in our family retreat. If you don't know what that means, you'll have to ask me after. Family gatherings are big and loud and important. I'm gonna have trouble getting through this next bit. God has blessed me with three children. I was entrusted to raise and father those three precious people. They're all grown now, adults. Some of you know them. And they're making their own choices. And some of them are good choices. And those are pretty easy to square with my identity as dad. But some of them are not so good. Some of them are bad. Don't ask me about that after, because I can't do it. Family is so good. It's so important. But it still can't be identity. It's still not enough. Accepting any one of these lesser identities becomes dangerous because my identity can't handle being challenged. You can question what I say or what I do, but if you question what I am, then you're questioning my existence. And we respond to challenges to our existence with fight or flight. And these are good things, okay? Work, vocation, calling is good. Family is so good. But jump back to the Garden of Eden with me. The serpent didn't tempt Eve with rotten fruit laying on the ground. Genesis 3 tells us, when the woman saw that the fruit of the tree was good for food, pleasing to the eye, and also desirable for gaining wisdom, she took some and ate it. The danger of false identity, the scheme of the devil, is to get us to take good things and put them in place of God. Who are we? Is it even possible to be known? I've tried to share with you who I am, but I can't. In some ways, I'm not sure I know who I am. I struggle to define myself by vocation, calling, family, nationality, politics, and it's all lesser. All of these things, I try to speak into identity by marrying them to I am. None of those things represent who I am, and they don't represent who you are either. The scriptures tell us that God knows the number of hairs on our head. In the Psalms, it says that he knew us before we were in our mother's womb. In fact, that phrase occurs in Jeremiah as well. And he says to Jeremiah, I consecrated you before you were in your mother's womb. That's beautiful, isn't it? It's a scary time to talk about identity. If you're worried about the identities that your children or your neighbors are claiming, I want to encourage you to first take the log out of your own eye. When you start to say, I am, I encourage you to slap a big not in there. For me, I am not a filmmaker. I am not a missionary or a husband or a father. I am so much more. I am his beloved. We are truly known. I may struggle to understand it, but it isn't based on my performance or how far I've come. Jesus didn't spend his time with people who had arrived, not in a worldly or a spiritual sense. Right now, as you are, without doing better or cleaning up your act, at this very moment, you are the beloved, his bride. He knows you completely, and he loves you. Let that sink in. Let it bubble and grow and build inside you. Let it boil over out of you and spill on to the people around you. If we want to change the world, that's how we do it. Thank you guys for having me. I hope you'll sign up and we can chat some more and you'll ask me all sorts of crazy questions after. Oh, and if you would like to receive our newsletter or get updates or stay in touch with us, there's a QR code there, or you can go to www.coxesquarterly.com, where that is also. I feel like an infomercial now. I'm going to go sit down.